offer my obeisances at the lotus feet of His Divine Grace, Abhoycharya Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who is the founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, ISKCON, who has spread the Bhakti Yoga all over the world to give people in the modern world an opportunity to connect with the Absolute Truth, and who is very merciful. Mukhakaroti bhacharam pandurlangayate giringatkipatamaham bande sigurum dinatadinam paramanandamalam shi chaitanyaswaram. What was the topic today? What is the difference between mysticism and spirituality? There's some water. My name is Jayapataka Swami. I live in India. I lived there since 1970, and I've been in the Krishna Conscious Movement since 1968. And I lost track, this must be somewhere like 7th or 9th or 8th time I've been here over the past 5 years. Sometimes once a year, sometimes twice. I'm always very happy to come here. Yesterday I had a program, today I'm with tight program because I have a flight. What I found here, this year the group is very spiritually empowered. Very high potential. In the name of mysticism, there are many things which are going on. And yesterday I made a diagram on the whiteboard, which we don't have today, but how we have our self in 3 levels: the physical, the psychic, or subtle, and then finally the spirit, which is a living force in the body. So, we know what deals with the physical. And generally anything that deals with the subtle is considered to be also spiritual, but it may be just psychic. It may not actually reach to the level of the spirit. Just like transmigration, astral projection. Some people do out-of-body experiences, and in their subtle body they go to other places. This in itself, that's not spiritual. That's actually controlling our psychic body and being able to use it to go places. Similarly, there are many out-of-the-body experiences that people have, may not be intentional. Like, sometimes people are on the operating table, they look down and they see somebody looks just like them being operated on. And later they realize that it was them, that they had left their body and they were watching the operation. And I was at a seminar once in Atlanta, Georgia, USA, where we had an expert on parapsychological phenomena as well as regression. He was a psychologist that had performed thousands of hypnotic regressions, taking people back into their former lives, put them in hypnosis, and then it's okay, now you're 22, you're 18, you're 15, you're 12, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now you're in the womb of your mother. Now you're in your previous birth. Then ask, you know, tell me where you are. You know, like, and who are you? And the person may speak in another language. They say, wherever you are, you may speak in French. Well, you speak to me always in English, no matter what. And in this way, they find out what was the person's former birth. And remarkably, anyone who is capable of going into a hypnotic state like that, they are able to regress. There's no other explanation than that there was reincarnation, why we can remember former lives. So, these are all very interesting experiences, and they're very helpful for some people to understand what the material world is and how it works. And I've had many people come to me and tell me that they had certain experiences like that, and they've gone to the contemporary churches or religious institutions and they couldn't really get any answers. So in Krishna consciousness, we can explain to them what all these phenomena are, because it's a very basic understanding in the Bhagavad Gita that how when we die, we leave the body, we go in our subtle body, then we are the living force, we go in our subtle body to a new body. And we keep on transmigrating from one birth to the next. So it's nothing unusual that somebody can remember their previous life, or even that sometimes we're able to leave our body and look down. We do it every night when we dream, but we're not really conscious at that time. If we can do it when we're in a conscious state, then it's considered like astral projection. And all these psychic dealings, there's a certain amount of danger. Like if somebody astral projects, there's a thin connection kept with the body, even when somebody's dreaming. It says it's dangerous to suddenly startle somebody and wake them up when they're asleep, because maybe that connection, like a silver thread, could get cut. And then the body would be dead. Because the living force has gone out of the body and is connected to this subtle thread. So you want to always wake up people gently. Because if they're dreaming and out of their body and they get shocked and they cut that connection, they won't get back. Similarly, when somebody's out of the body, then they may be susceptible. Even when you're in the body. For instance, if somebody's intoxicated or very depressed, or some people are just very open to it, sometimes they get taken over by subtle entities or by ghosts. And then at that time the ghosts, they don't have a gross body. So they aren't able to enjoy, they have no senses. They're just a subtle body without a gross body. So the way they can enjoy is if they can take over somebody's body temporarily, then they can enjoy through that body. So sometimes people have dreams which are filled with sense gratification, there may be a ghost trying to enjoy through the body. So there's, or someone may do crazy things. In the Vedic astrology, there's a book called Prasna, which is knowing the omens of a person when the physical body language of a person when they ask questions, whether they are under the influence of a subtle entity or what is the nature of their question and their present state of consciousness. Sometimes people use these experiences for good works. They may try to do healing, or they may be able to open themselves for some positive purpose, but there's, again, there's certain risks involved. Whatever, I just wanted to explain that all these different experiences are real experiences, and they have an explanation in the Vedas, but in and of themselves, they're not a spiritual experience. They're a psychic or a subtle experience. Sometimes they're considered as mysticism. Actually, real mysticism is spiritual. But maybe what goes for mysticism, many of it is on a psychic level. Krishna is also known as Yogeshwara. Yoga is also known as mysticism. And Yogeshwara means the Lord of all mystics, or all mysticism. So, real mysticism means it's connected with the spirit. Spirit is transcendental to the material world. As I mentioned, we are actually the spirit. But we're working through our mind and through our physical body. So what we want to do through the process of bhakti yoga is to put the self in charge. So normally the whole consciousness is going more downward. The physical senses want to serve the objects of the senses. Want to eat some ice cream, want to take some to eat, something to touch, something to think about. So we're serving with our senses, we're serving a gross object of the senses. And the mind is used to coordinate the senses so that we can achieve what our objective is. And intelligence is used to make a strategy for how to achieve it. And the living force just kind of gets dragged along. Where in a spiritual perspective, then the living force tries to serve Krishna or God, and by in serving the Lord, then he uses the intelligence to help to coordinate the mind and control the mind, uses the mind to control the senses, and uses the senses to use the sense objects. So everything is going up towards God, with other everything is going down towards matter. So that's why if we use our subtle or spiritual energies for some material purpose, then it's very frustrating ultimately. It's not satisfying. But when we use everything going up to Krishna, then it naturally becomes satisfying. Because that's the nature of our soul. We want to be connected with the free light. We want to be connected with the free spirit, with the spiritual energy. When we have that connection, then naturally we feel peaceful and we feel happy. So, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, I don't know, how many of you read the Bhagavad Gita? Quite a number. Bhagavad Gita is a very important book. It's like a science of the self. So in there, Krishna, the greatest mystic, he told Arjuna that you should work for me. You should act on my behalf. And I will give you the power to work. Actually, I'll be doing everything. But you will be the vayamidhi, you'll be the instrument. You'll get all the credit. So if we open up ourselves to Krishna and let his energy fill us, and we do activities on behalf of Krishna, then we get the divine energy to do things. There's no limit to what somebody can do. Just like ISKCON's founder Acharya, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. He was one person. But he had this mission that he wanted to carry the message of Krishna to the West. He went with $40, 40 rupees, which was $8 at that time, which is how many rand? That's about 50 rand. So he went with 50 rand. Is that right? Eight times, yeah, that time, because Maldives. And he went to all along to America. And from there, gradually, he went all around the world. And now the whole world is, you know, covered with different Hare Krishna devotees and temples. Just from the effort of one person trying. Whenever somebody asked him, what was your secret? He said, my secret was I simply tried carry out the order of my spiritual master and to fulfill the desire of Krishna. If I have any success, it's because of Krishna's mercy. So every one of you can also be spiritually empowered. There's no limit to how much potency you can have. You can be an instrument in the hands of Krishna to change the world, to make a difference in other people's lives. If you know what the whole structure of the universe is in terms of what life is, then you're also in a very powerful position just by that knowledge. Everybody's going to university to get knowledge. If you have more knowledge, you can use it to your advantage. But knowing what life is, that's the most confidential subject matter. in the Bhagavad Gita is the Raja Vidya Raja Guru, is the king of education, the king of knowledge. Because it gives one realization of the self. So that's what we like all of you to achieve, is the full realization of yourself. And then be able to be empowered to help other people to come out of that illusion, come out of the misidentification of the self as the body or only the mind, to know that we are eternal. So things which are directly connected to Krishna, they're basically spiritual. Things which are connected to the self, things which are connected to the mind and psyche, subtle, is the subtle platform. And those things connected with the body are bodily. But if we use the mind or use the body in Krishna's service, then everything becomes spiritualized. Just like if you put electric wire on to some metal, the whole metal becomes electrified. So we'd like all of you to become spiritualized in your life. And that is very easily achieved by, we discussed this all the different ways, chanting Hare Krishna, reading, associating with devotees, taking spiritual food, sometimes visiting the temple, doing some work for Krishna, doing some, seeing your own activities ultimately oriented to bring you closer to Krishna. By connecting yourself to the intelligence to Krishna's to Krishna, then everything you do becomes spiritualized. You become empowered warriors to overcome the conditioning of the material world and to actually see things as they are. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Rama. Any question? Just have? Okay. Thank you very much.
So we'd like to say thank you very much to our guest speaker. She's going to share the time as well.